Please open your Old Testaments to the book of Ecclesiastes. We're going to be studying there this morning, talking about that. That's not where I'll begin. I'll be in Psalm, 1 Kings chapter 3 in just a moment, but look forward to you studying with me from the scriptures. The very last words of the book of Ecclesiastes are these: "The conclusion when all has been heard is fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person, for God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil." I think the book of Ecclesiastes is an extremely interesting and timely book. The book of Ecclesiastes was written for us. I know that it has application to any and every age, but it was written for us, and for us in America, and it was written for us at this time in America. And we really, really need to listen to its message, all of us, and especially the young people. You need to listen to the message of the book of Ecclesiastes. It is a misunderstood book. I thought about reading chapter 1 and including it in the sermon, but I decided not to. But I would encourage you to read chapter 1. And on the basis of that, there are a lot of people who conclude that it was written by a grumpy old man sour on life, who kind of looked at the world through a negative eyes, is just a bitter fella. Life didn't go very well for him, and everywhere he looks, he sees sourness and disappointment and emptiness, and it's unfortunate that the book of Ecclesiastes records the words of a fellow who looks at life like that. Now, people don't say it that way, but there are people who are really confused or who completely misunderstand this book. What it says about this world and what it says about life on this world, on this earth, is not what this world wants to admit. Let me say that again. What the book of Ecclesiastes says about living on this earth is not what this earth wants us to hear. It doesn't want that. In fact, it wants us to believe quite the opposite and is successful in convincing many of that. These words, If you imagine that Ecclesiastes comes from a jaded old writer sour on life, and that he's writing about things that really aren't accurately representing what this world is and has to offer, if you conclude that, then you can successfully dismiss the main message of Ecclesiastes and think you're wise and justified in doing so. And so to this generation, to my countrymen, to those who are alive with me, I beg that we all give a fair hearing to the book of Ecclesiastes, and to at least entertain the possibility that the wisest man who ever lived never spoke so clearly in all of his life than he did when he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. I want you to consider that possibility is exactly true. Be fair enough to consider that, even in an age where there are many who would want to dismiss this book. 1 Kings chapter 3 records a prayer that King Solomon, the writer of the book of Ecclesiastes, offered to God when he was a younger man. And he was invited by God in 1 Kings chapter 3 and verse 5 to ask what you wish me to give to you. Ask God whatever you want to ask, and God says, I'll give it to you. And then Solomon recounts the greatness of his father David and his own smallness. And he is overwhelmed by the responsibility of being a king. And he is keenly aware of his need for God's help. And so he says in verse number 8, "Your servant is in the midst of your people, which you have chosen, a great people who are too many to be numbered or counted. So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" And this request was pleasing in the sight of the Lord. And so God gave to Solomon the wisdom that he asked for and more of it, so that he would be the wisest of all the kings ever before him or any who would ever live after him. He would possess wisdom above them all. And then, in addition to that, he gave to Solomon that which he did not ask for, and riches and power and those kinds of things. What a unique position Solomon operated from, and how uniquely equipped he was to comment on life on the earth. And in addition to his wisdom and his position as king and so forth, he spoke as an inspired man. And he spoke the truth about what he saw in the world around him. The book of Ecclesiastes was written by not a young Solomon, but now Solomon, the old man. And he looks back on life from a valuable perspective. And with God's help, he describes what life on earth is and what it is like. C.S. Lewis offered this observation: "Human life, or human history, is the long, terrible story of men trying to find something other than God which will make him happy." Human history is the long, terrible story of men trying to find something other than God which will make him happy. The book of Ecclesiastes is describing very much the same thing, and concludes by saying there is nothing here. So where does a person go? To back up just a minute to get Solomon's perspective on things, where does a person go to find fulfillment in their life? This sense that the journey that I'm on is really worth something. I'll not live my life and then regret it. I'll not look back and see emptiness and confusion and disappointment. Where do I go to find that which will fill me? That which will make me whole or complete? Where do we go to find that which brings satisfaction and lets us know that our life has been worth living? Ecclesiastes takes aim at those kinds of questions and addresses the predictable and the worldly approach to trying to answer those really important questions, questions that all of us have. Not everybody in this building has, but everybody who ever lives. They want happiness and fulfillment and purpose. The book of Ecclesiastes addresses that and acknowledges there are many failed, faulty ways of going about this. There are people who will say, "I just need a little bit more money." I mean, when was it that this Mega Millions jackpot was won? It's just last week or so, and all the excitement. And I wonder how many people thought that if I could just win this money, all the problems would be solved, my life would be good, everything would be just fine. Well, if Solomon were here, He would rise up and he would warn people who think that way. That is vanity. That is empty. It will not work. It does not provide. In fact, if you're interested, I think there's some research been done on the life of those who have won these lotteries after they win. Find out in a real life sort of way. Okay, how much happiness does this bring? How much fulfillment does it offer? And then return to Ecclesiastes. Thousands of years ago, by inspiration, Solomon said that's exactly the case. There's emptiness there. Okay, but sexual fulfillment, or a better job, or better health. I just go to the right doctor, just get the right medicine, just have the right surgery. Finally, the pain will be gone. Then I'll have my life back, and then things will be good. Really? Really? If I could just have people who'd appreciate me, if I just have a little experience with fame and recognition, just around the next corner, if it's not this, it'll be something else. But I don't have what I need right now, but I am confident that if a stroke of luck or a little bit more effort, or if something were to happen around the next corner, what I need, what I'm lacking right now, will at last be provided, and my life will be filled, my life will be happy, I'll have what I need. Y'all know how inadequate my attempt to describe things sometimes is, but I'm really trying to describe what I do believe is the attitude of so many people who are looking for and hoping that in this life, on this planet, around the next corner, their stroke of good luck will come to them, and the pain will be taken away, and the life will be good, and things will be happy. And Solomon says, that is not going to happen. It is like trying to grasp the wind. You reach for it, but there is nothing there. This world was never equipped to provide what we need, and it doesn't want us to know that it's not equipped to provide what we need. In fact, this constant search for fulfillment and contentment and happiness and purpose and joy, this constant search for that in this world will prevent us from searching for and finding where real happiness and fulfillment come from. And that is, of course, what is behind this world and the master of this world, this world's desire that we keep hoping and thinking that one more time and one more effort and things will change. It will not. Augustine said, "You have made us for yourself, and we are restless until we rest in you." That is the truth. This restless world will never be satisfied until this restless world realizes that the only peace and fullness is found in God, which is, of course, the message of the book of Ecclesiastes. God gave us Ecclesiastes. Solomon wrote Ecclesiastes so that we don't have to make the same mistakes. We don't have to live a wasted life, striving after the wind, only to grow old one day and empty. God didn't create us for that. And God doesn't want us to live a life on earth like that. And it is the book of Ecclesiastes that has something to say that points us in a better direction. The psalmist David in Psalm 37, verse 25 said, "I was young and now I'm old." And then he said some other things. But that's all the part that I'm interested in. "Because I was young and now I'm old." And I preach this sermon differently than I did when I was young. I preach this sermon differently than when I was young. There's a song in our songbook. The very first verse says, "I'd like to stay here longer than men's allotted days and watch the fleeting changes of life's uneven ways." When I was young, the words of that song That was my theme song. That was saying what I really want. I like to stay here longer than men's allotted days. Now, I don't know if I was just an odd young man, but I am going to be guessing that I was not. And that there are a lot of young people, and some young people in this audience and young people all around this world, who are imagining that they too would like to stay here longer. And imagining that this world is filled with joy and excitement and fulfillment and purpose and a happy life is just jumping in with both feet. I've lived long enough to see a little bit of what Solomon is acknowledging. And there are people in this audience who have done the same, who've lived longer than I have. And I know about Michael Jordan and Robin Williams and Mega Million jackpot winners. And I've watched people who drink from this life and take from it and hope in it. And I've watched the broken homes and broken lives. And they try to find what this world was never equipped to provide. And it is a tragic and it is a sad thing to see. And we read the Bible and we know where it's going. We know where lives like that are going. The sadness doesn't stop with growing old without purpose. Growing old without fulfillment. It doesn't stop there. Because that soul and every soul will stand one day in judgment before God. And what will be judged on that day? Is how we have treated God. How we have heard His word. How we have obeyed Him. Or ignored it. Discounted it. Treated it as trivial. And there are eternal consequences. Hell is a real place. And an eternal place. Darkness, suffering, pain. And it's irrevocable. And it's coming. The judgment day is coming for us all. And the weightiness of all this is profound. I'd like to stay here longer than men's allotted days and watch the fleet. I choose not to sing that verse anymore. The book of Ecclesiastes begins with a description of a monotonous world. The sun comes up and the sun goes down. Things spin around. There's nothing really new here. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and at verse number 10, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage to the owners except to look on it? Or in chapter 10, verse number 19, I think a companion verse to that first one. Men prepare a meal for enjoyment, and wine makes life merry, and money is the answer to everything. There you go. There's the worldly perspective on things. If I just get a little more, my investments materialize, only to find out later that what you expect those kinds of successes to provide are not provided. And the reason is they are never equipped to do those kinds of things. They just are not able to do that. And God wants us to see that, lest we trust in that which is at last vanity, emptiness, striving after the wind. There are people who exhaust themselves and make life-changing sacrifices, only to realize there is no satisfaction at the end of those sacrifices and no true enjoyment. Life has complexities, Ecclesiastes tells us. Complexities that we can't figure out. And there are many times when things are just the opposite of what they appear. There are crooked things that cannot be straightened. And there is tragedy that comes in unexpected times in our lives. And we are at last living on this planet in uncertain and unpredictable circumstances. We can't master all of these things so as to order them in some way that will bring us happiness. But as you read through Ecclesiastes, I think that there are many people who ignore these observations or who marginalize them maybe people think that their attempt at being wise will be more successful than Solomon's. Their attempt at mastering their life will be more successful than Solomon's was. And so they'll listen patiently and then press on in a different direction. I just want to call your attention to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, beginning with verse 16 and down through verse 17 of chapter 2, where Solomon, with his wisdom and his power as a king, he brought to himself all that his eyes desired. And whatever his eyes desired, he did not refuse them. And so you take money and pleasure and sexual gratification and intoxication and accomplishment and fame and wealth. And then you take those ideas and you ramp them up exponentially as far as you want to. And imagine all of these things that you can imagine. And Solomon had more than that. He amassed all of that in an attempt to gain from this world what will bring satisfaction and fulfillment. And then in verse 17 of chapter 2, he concluded by saying, because everything is futility and striving after the wind. Okay, you can either believe that observation, or you cannot and doom yourself to repeat the kind of broken and tragic life that Solomon experienced when he trusted that this world would give him what he really needs. The choice is each of us will make that choice. Now, I know that we're inclined to want to trust what Solomon had said by inspiration and benefit from it. So turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 13 and 14 again, where I started just a moment ago. So what is the answer? Solomon spent a lot of time telling us what's not the answer and what will disappoint. So what is the answer? If someone is willing to read, and if someone is willing to agree, then is there something or is there someone that makes all of this earthly existence and our experience here, is there something or someone that makes all of this make sense or offers something better, something real, something filling and something enduring? Is there really someone or something that'll do that? And the answer is yes, there is, and it's God. All that has been heard by the time you get to these last two verses of Ecclesiastes lead to two last fundamental truths that have to be heard. The universe, as one translation renders it, the universe has been created only for the purpose of being commanded to do this. Fear God and keep His commandments. Fear God and keep His commandments. Because this applies to every person. This is what fits every human being. The universe is brought into existence so that you and I and every human being would understand two fundamental commandments. Fear God and keep His commandments. It applies to everyone. And then the conclusion in verse 14, for God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Fearing God. There is a gripping, spine-straightening experience that comes in the presence of God. The fear of God is that which puts us in our proper place. It is God who holds the secrets. It is God who knows and knows what fills the hole inside of us, and He alone can fill that. He will be our judge. We will answer to Him, and He has our eternity in His hands. Fear God. My son John is a member of the church in Traders Point in Indianapolis, and he, along with several other members of the church, periodically make trips into a detention facility in Indianapolis where they teach Bible classes, and John is one of those who does the teaching. He told me recently of a Bible study with a group of teenagers who had broken the law and were headed very clearly down the wrong road. And in the course of that study, the Christians talked to this group of young people from 2 Peter chapter 3 and talked about the second coming of Jesus, the destruction of the universe by fire, and a final judgment that would come before God that would result for many in a sentence to an eternal hell where there is fire and weeping. And this one 17-year-old boy was terrified at those thoughts. He had never in his 17 years heard anything like that. And he raised his hand and said, "Is that really what's going to happen?" "Yes, that's exactly what the Bible says is going to happen. Yes, it is." And he was terrified. Now, what he does with this information and what he does with this moment you stand face to face with God, I don't know. I don't know how that story with this 17-year-old boy ended, or certainly how it will end. But he exemplified what it meant to fear God, to respect Him, to come to attention, to be careful in the presence of God. Be careful in the presence of God. Revere Him. Keep His commandments. Do what He says. Do what He commands. Listen to His counsel. Heed His counsel. Obey what He teaches. Admit our own inabilities and our own lack of wisdom and ability to see into the future. Seek and follow God's teaching that's revealed in the Bible. Keep His commandments. This is every man's obligation. This is the all in all for every person. Fear God and keep His commandments. And then judgment is coming. In verse number 14, the last verse of the book of Ecclesiastes. In the Old Testament, there were a lot of examples to show that God is the judge. And all of those examples judgments are examples of the ability of God to judge nations and kingdoms and masses of people. God has the ability to do that, to judge them and to bring them down. But in this passage is introduced personal judgment. Personal judgment. That at this judgment, God will see everything. The obvious stuff about your life and mine, and the hidden things about your life and mine. God knows them. And those things will be open for judgment on this great day. And God knows the good things about your life. And He knows the evil. There are no secrets. And all of this is relevant before the God who knows and who has judgment in His hands. And we stand before Him. And to orient our life in view of God, in view of fearing God and keeping His commandments, this is what brings, it brings our life into line with our Creator and why we are here, where we came from, where we're going, what we're supposed to do while we're here. And beneath the guidance of this loving God, life has meaning and purpose and fulfillment. And it is God who fills the hole, who fills the need inside every one of us. And only God can fill that. We cannot deal effectively, we cannot deal with life until we deal with God. And we do it on His terms, not ours. We've got to read, we've got to know about Him. We've got to hear what He has to say. We have to obey Him. And life cannot be dealt with properly until we begin by dealing with God and doing so on His terms. So I close by either asking you to turn to Luke chapter 16 or remember that story well enough, you'll let me talk about it just a little bit. Luke chapter 16, and it's the story of the rich man and Lazarus. And both of them died, and the rich man went to torment, and Lazarus went to a place of paradise. And the rich man wanted some comfort or wanted to escape, and at last realized that none of those options were available to him. And so in verse number 28 of Luke chapter 16, this man in torment said these words, "For I have five brothers, in order that he may warn them so that they will not also come to this place of torment." Did you get what he was saying? This man was in torment. He wasn't going to get out. Wasn't going to get any relief. And so his plea was, then send someone to warn my brothers who have not died yet so that they don't come to this place of torment. And Solomon, in the book of Ecclesiastes, was given the privilege of doing what the rich man in Luke chapter 16 was not able to do. Solomon could speak to those who were living about all that matters, so that we don't walk in his broken footsteps, to make these mistakes, to spend our life in vain pursuit of things that'll never provide. The book of Ecclesiastes lets us hear the warnings that we don't have to make those same mistakes. Who's going to listen? That at last is the big question. And I trust you will, and I want to too. May we take this message of Ecclesiastes to our generation. It's written for our time. It's written for America now. And may the truth that comes from God and is found there be shared with others with love and concern, and be practiced in our own life as well. This morning, if you need to obey the teaching of God, if you want to obey His commands and you yield to Him with reverent fear of God, to obey the gospel and become a Christian, we want to help you do that. We'd encourage you to do that. Our heart's desires are for you to do that. If you become a Christian, but this world's got a grip on you, and you're not living for Christ, and this world's counsel is being listened to more than it should be, you need to stop that and turn from that. There's nothing here. There's nothing here. Don't be fooled to think so. Maybe you need the prayers of the Christians here. Maybe you need the help of the Christians here in some way. If we can provide that kind of help, and we are fellow strugglers, all of us are. We need this counsel so much. But if we can help you in some way this morning, let us know while we stand to sing this song.